Okay, at this time, the chairperson should briefly qualify, which I will. Requirements for chairing a meeting at the Central Orlando Group Saturday Night Speakers Meeting are 1 year continuous variety, having Central as your home group, and attend a group conscious meeting. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Jim Powers. My sobriety date's February 18, 2002, and I attend every group conscious meeting because this is my group and I want to know what's going on. And that's my qualifications. And the group asked me to remind you to please make sure your phones are off and refrain from moving around or talking while the speaker is sharing. And to introduce the speaker, I can tell you this, that somebody invited me to go over to the East Side Club to hear a guy speak one night. They didn't show up, but I did. And the message that the man carried was something that was very important to me. And he carries a great message of recovery. I see him around at other groups. I've heard him talk before. And how about a warm welcome for Mike W. Yeah.
Everybody. Wow. You guys look scary. My name's Mike W. and I am an alcoholic. I normally don't get that nervous, but I'm pretty nervous tonight. And I want to take a couple of seconds here. We're a man short in the room. I mean, it doesn't look like it. It's pretty full. One of ours passed, and we buried him today. And I'd like to take a couple moments of silence for him. It's Mike R., and if you never met him, you missed out. He was 29 years sober, and he died sober, and I hope they can say that about me when I pass. But if we could take like 10 seconds, maybe ask God to come into the room and help us get through this hour and lift Mike up there. Thank you. That was the second awkward moment. Anyways, I'm a member of the Jaywalkers group. We meet at Tuesday nights at 7 p.m. over at Redeemer Lutheran Church over off of Aloma. It's a quarter mile east of Cimarron. If you've never been there, see me after the meeting if you want to come. I'll give you directions. The first Sunday of every month, we have a speaker meeting at 3 o'clock, followed by potluck at 4, best potluck in the whole wide world. My home group is the best home group in the whole wide world. If you don't have one of those and you want one of those, come over and see us. If your own home group isn't the best home group in the whole wide world, don't come and muck ours up. So I'd like to welcome the visitor from Georgia. It's sweet. I got someone who traveled all the way from Georgia to hear me talk. The newcomers, I'm glad you guys are here, because if you guys don't come, we got nothing. We need to share this message with others, and it works, and that's how it works. The book tells us what to do, and we try to follow those directions, or at least I do. I started drinking when I was really young, and I was a bad drunk. I wasn't a good... You know what? What it was like was awesome. It was the best thing that ever happened to me my whole life. It was. When I first started drinking, It was crazy good. I mean, when it worked, when it started working. It took me a while to get it going, but once it got going, it was nice. The first several times I really attempted drinking, I puked. Is there any pukers in here?
Yeah.
You don't hear that asked in church, right? You know, I learned how to do it. I learned how to puke and party. Is there any pukers and partiers in here?
Yeah.
See, I could get so drunk and so sick that I would go and I would hurl my brains out. And I felt wonderful after that. It was great. And I went back to partying. But if alcohol did for you what it did for me, and it kept doing it, you wouldn't be here. See, it stopped doing that for me, but I didn't know it. I went through that. It was working for me for a long time. When it quit working, I missed it. I didn't know it quit working. I kept drinking, and it was bad. It got really bad. But I want to say something about it. When it was good, it was really good. And people think, oh, you're an alcoholic. It must have been awful. Skid Row. It wasn't like that in the beginning. It was wonderful. I felt stronger, smarter, faster, better looking than anybody I'd ever met. I felt like you guys were lucky to know me when I drank. And when I was sober, I didn't feel that way. When I was sober, I felt like something was wrong. I didn't fit in anywhere. and it seemed like I couldn't talk to people. I didn't do well at school. I did stuff that I'm not proud of, and I don't know. I couldn't tell you why I did that. I could say it's because I'm a drunk, and you know all the things I did. They don't make me a drunk. That's not what made me an alcoholic. It explains it in our book too. It says that if you pick up a drink and you don't know when you're going to stop drinking, you may be an alcoholic. I was that type. I was the kind of guy that when I started, I didn't know when I was going to stop, and I didn't know what was going to happen between the time I picked up that drink and the time I woke up, because I rarely did I make it through a night where I didn't black out or pass out when I drank in my later years. Early on, when it was working really good, I didn't even know what a hangover was. I'm even puking. I'd go out and I'd have a riot, and I'd get up the next morning and I'd talk to everybody, tell them what a great time I had. I didn't feel hangovers at all. You know, I felt like this was my solution to living. I just thought I had a way to do it. I thought alcohol was it. And I didn't know when it was going to, I didn't know what was going to happen. But I got my first DUI when I was 18. And that was a sign. And I quit drinking. In fact, I quit drinking for a year. Now, not many people can do that if you're a real alcoholic. I'm going to tell you, I substituted. I smoked a ton of pot for a year. But I made it a whole year without drinking. And that proved to me that you're not an alcoholic. Heck, alcoholics, they can't make it. They're going to drink. So I started drinking again. And then within 3 or 4 months, I got my next DUI. And I swore off alcohol again. Said, I never drank. I'm going to drink. I'm going to stay sober for a year. And I made it about 6 months this time. And I thought, you know, that's long enough. You can make it a year easy. And so I started drinking again. And within 3 or 4 months, I got my next DUI. And the story went on. And the only change was the distance. The time that I could stay sober got shorter. At the end, I just said, I can't stay sober. I got 9 DUIs. And this is, for me, this is how cunning, baffling, powerful alcoholism is. I didn't think I was an alcoholic. I thought the cops were after me. I thought a couple of bad luck on a Friday night or a Saturday night. You know, I didn't really mean to be driving so fast and hit that ditch so hard. And I always, whenever I got pulled over, I got arrested. And I remember people would be talking about how many speeding tickets they have. Like, oh, you dummies, I never got a speeding ticket in my life. Every time I got pulled over for speeding, I was drunk. They didn't give me a speeding ticket, they gave me a DUI. For the younger people in this crowd, that's what they were called back then. I don't know what they're called. It was a DWI is what it was. Now it's a DUI, all right. Well, I don't know. Anyways, the court saw fit that I go to treatment. They said, I had to get evaluated. And, you know, everybody's been, I think everybody here has been evaluated one time or another. I went in there, and I lied. You know, I told them stuff. I told them fairy tale stuff, what I thought normal people would drink like, I guess. I don't know. And she goes, Mike, you need help. And all I could think of was, what are you talking about? I mean, I've been lying for a whole hour, and you're telling me I need help. You know, well, and, you know, I had 90 UI. It's not like they didn't have my chart, right? She knew I was just full of it, and I didn't know, you know. So they said, and I said, all right, you know, I'll go to treatment. I'll go to some of that outpatient treatment. And they said, that's not where you're going. I said, you need to go to inpatient treatment. And I said, well, I'm not going to do that. And they said, well, if you don't, you can't get your driver's license back ever. And that was a motivator for me. And I, like I said, again, I still didn't think I was an alcoholic. I'd had some pretty hard flings with the law and with other things, drinking, but it really just never, I just didn't want to be an alcoholic. Backing up, in 1983, my best friend died in a car crash, drunk. And that was kind of when the party changed for me. Whiskey didn't work good anymore. In fact, it didn't work at all. And I kept trying to use it. And I'd go home, or I'd go out, and I'd get drunk, and I'd start getting sick, and I'd black out, and I'd pass out, and I'd wake up someplace or whatever. And it never got the way it was. You know, when the first couple of drinks, you feel that warm glow, and it's splashing down there, and you feel like, yeah, this is going to be the night. You know, I'm going to meet her. And then tomorrow I'm going to have an awesome job. I'm going to get this awesome job, and I think maybe one day I might even run for president. That's how whiskey worked for me. Not anymore. Now it was bad. Now it was two drinks, and I was slurring my words, and I wasn't doing well. I couldn't walk straight, and I couldn't figure out what was going on. That went on for a long time, too. My sobriety date is April 30th, 1988. And if you're in here, and you're one of those guys, like I was, get a sponsor. Don't just quit it. Don't go in and out and in and out. Don't do it. Don't try to not to drink and not get treated. It's a hard way to go. But yeah, I ended up moving down here. I went through that treatment center, and some things happened there that were very interesting. I stayed sober for 30 days, and I thought, you know, after that 30 days, I went, wow, that is pretty cool. That's interesting, because I never did that before, ever. And I didn't know. I didn't know what to think. But anyway, they asked me, would I go to a halfway house, and I didn't want to go. So I didn't volunteer. And then, first they asked me, would I volunteer for the 35-day program instead of the 28-day program? And I said, no, I don't think so. I just want to go home. And they said, well, we think you should. We think you should. So I did. And then you do your fourth and fifth right there. And I did my first, fourth, and fifth step in a treatment center in St. Cloud, Minnesota. And they did it with a priest. And I have a Catholic background, and I was resentful. I had a real rough time being a Catholic. And I went into that priest, and I told him every sordid little detail of my whole life, and it was awful. I mean, it was awful. And then it was like a resentment fist step. It was brutal. I got done, and the priest told me to go do some Hail Marys and Our Fathers, and I thought, that's what I thought. You know, that's exactly what I thought. What a great solution. You know, I did not believe that. And anyways, February 16th is my birthday. And in treatment, February 11th, 1983. February 12th, my girlfriend breaks up with me. No, by February 16th, I'm feeling sorry enough for myself that I'm going to go out and get drunk. And that's it. It's over. I got $21 in my pocket. I know I can walk 2-3 miles right to the bar. I can get snapped off. And I'm headed out. And it's February. Now it's like, I don't know, 0 degrees out, which is a pretty warm night in February in Minnesota. It's not bad. And I head out the door. And it was still out. Nothing was moving. And I had been around for, you know, a little bit, a minute, and there was a church. Next to the church, there was a tree. On the side of the church, and there's this light shining on the tree, and it was February, so there's no leaves, but there was frozen water on the tree. It was all froze up, like it thawed, and then it froze, and there was water on the tree, and this light was hitting it, and it was glowing. And it was just bright. It was just calling me. And I go, God, if you can hear me, you let me in your house. And I walked over to the side of that church, and I yanked on the side door. Now it's 11 o'clock at night, I guess. And I yanked on that side door, and the door opened. And my heart shot up into my throat, and my heart started racing. I was like, I thought I was going to see God. I mean, I really did. I mean, and you have to know, I'm not sober very long. I mean, I come from a long line of heavy drinking. I was lost in space. So now I think I'm going to see God. And I go in there, and I sit in the front pew. I didn't know what to do. I was scared. I just didn't know what to do. So I got on my knees, and I just started praying. I didn't know what to do. So I'm there for like 45 minutes, and there's this water heater, and it's up by the altar. And it's clicking. Now, I didn't know it was a water heater. I thought it was God saying, come over here. I was freaking out. So after about 45 minutes of praying, you know, alcoholics, we're kind of impatient. He wasn't coming out. So I got up and I walked over there. And I saw the water heater. I said, yeah, that's about right. But so then, now I'm relieved it wasn't God. It's like, wow. But I walk outside. And there's a still in the night, and there's a different feeling about me, and I can't explain it. It just, I felt a sense of peace. And I walked back to my room, and I went to bed. I didn't go get drunk. I said, well, whatever. And I finished that. And anyways, I did the 35 days, and then they said, we're looking for volunteers to go to this halfway house. And I kept my heart. I was in the Marine Corps. They teach it, don't ever volunteer. Whatever you do, do not volunteer. So I'm not volunteering. He goes, Mike, I think you should go. I go, no, I don't think I should go. We don't know. We know. That's why we think you should go. So I went, and I get there, and it was amazing. And these people love me. You know, when I was drinking, nobody, I didn't love anybody. All I did was love me, and I didn't feel any love either. I didn't get that from anybody. I felt like I was alone. But now these people are caring for me, and they have these, they let me be me, you know, and I'm not drinking, which was another big deal. You know, I'm not drinking. I'm going, wow, this is crazy. So I'm there for 3 months, and I extend. I want to extend. And I extend, and 4 months go by, 5 months go by, 6 months. I go, Mike, it's time for you to go. I said, but I don't want to go. And they said, we know. That's why it's time for you to go. It's always backwards. I'm always backwards. I said, I'm scared. I said, well, you can't stay here. You gotta take some steps. You gotta move. So I moved. I went back to Minnesota, and it was in Wisconsin, the treatment center. So I ended up back in Minnesota, and I knew I was gonna die there. You know, my friends were very adamant about me. They wanted me to party with them. They didn't want me to stay. And I didn't blame them. I mean, I was partying with them forever, and now I was done. And I was trying to save my family, and they asked me to leave. They said, my youngest sister said, Mike, if you keep on trying to do this, I'm going to have to ask you to go. All I wanted to do was try to get them sober. You know, I wasn't sober. I didn't know what the hell. It was crazy. But so they said, if you're going to keep doing that, you're going to have to leave. And she was right. But she wasn't right because of that. She was right because I couldn't stay there. I had too much history. So we moved to Colorado. I had a job all set up. In a couple weeks, I had it all set up. I had a bunch of money saved up, and I was on my way out. And the job starts to fall apart. My old boss calls me up and says, hey, I got a job down in Florida. Would you come down to Florida? And I said, absolutely. And I ended up in Florida. And I ended up going out to Pine Hills Grace Group. I don't know if you've ever been, but if you ever get a chance, go out there. I hadn't been there in a long time, but I hung out there every day. They had this thing on Wednesdays called the Ask It Basket. It was really cool. I'd ask all these goofy questions. Nobody knew it was me. Probably everybody did, but I'd ask them. And, you know, I tell you, I don't know about you guys, but if you're a drunk of my type, you're proud. And my ego wouldn't let me sponsor up. I couldn't get anyone. I couldn't do it. I sponsored me, and I don't recommend that. It went really bad, and I did it for a long time, and it got worse and worse. And I ended up sticking a gun in my mouth after 4 years of trying to get sober on my own. And you know what I thought when I got the gun in my mouth? I went, this is not sobriety. See, for 4 years, I had convinced myself that I was sober, but it wasn't true. It wasn't even close. I was so lost. I tell you, if you can't drink whiskey and you don't have a solution, it's going to be a hard, bumpy road. It wasn't good. And grace of God saved me from pulling that trigger because I wanted to die. I did not want to live. And what happened was I had this idea, and the idea was you could go get a bottle. And it was a great idea. From where I was at to where I got right there in that very second was a really good idea. And I kind of eased off that trigger. Then I got the third idea, and it came from chasing chicks in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I didn't do anything except drink coffee and chase women. That's all I did in Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not get a sponsor. I read the book for pickup lines. And you guys are laughing, but I'm telling you what. You know, it goes on all the time. So, but anyways, my next thought came from chasing chicks and drinking coffee in Alcoholics Anonymous. It was, you could get a sponsor and go through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous like the rest of them dummies. And all of a sudden, everything was okay right there. I didn't want to die. Heck, I felt really good. And I put the gun under the bed and I went to sleep. And I fell asleep and I slept that night for the first time in 4.5 years. I'm telling you, for 4.5 years, my brain was on the march. It was moving fast. And all I could do was close my eyes. I didn't sleep much. And then it was time to get up. And I'd go do my thing and act like, you know, I was a great actor. If you ask me how I was doing awesome. I mean, I was great. Everything was great. And I was dying. God, I was just dying. And, you know, looking back, I'm not even sure I knew I was dying until that night. But and backing up a little bit, actually backing up to the night before I put that gun in my mouth, I was at a meeting and I was crying about how I'm endogenously depressed, and my doctor put me on some medication. You know, some old-timer piped up, and I never met the guy. I didn't even see him because it was a big room. I don't think there was this many people in there. He goes, shut up. He said, why don't you get a sponsor and go through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous? Well, that's where I got the idea. So, anyways, I did get a sponsor, and he was a wonderful man. He's passed since. And I got another one after that, and he left town. And now I got another one, and I'm working on him. And I think it doesn't matter how long you've been in Alcoholics Anonymous. I think it's imperative that you have someone that you can take your things to, that you know that he's going to tell you the truth no matter what your feelings are, that he's going to give you the straight scoop no matter what. Now, I got a lot of friends who will do that, but if I want, I know which one to go to get the right answer. I know who to talk to. They're going to tell me exactly what I want them to tell me. It doesn't work like that. I think sponsorship is important. I think it's, for this alcoholic, it's critical. I'll die if I don't have one. I won't make it. And I'm 23 years sober saying that, and it's still true for me today. You let me string out on my own thinking for a couple of minutes, and we're going off. And you know, when I've been there in sobriety, and I think everybody has, I think you get sober, and you think you're sober. And then stuff starts to happen, and it tests your sobriety. And you don't know it. I don't know it. I'm in there grinding away, and then all of a sudden I look and go, what are you doing? You know, and then, you know, and timing is everything in AA, too. It just seems like God has a big presence in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's how I got contacted with God. I didn't, when I got here, I had a really informal idea of God. I didn't understand God at all. In fact, I really thought I was going to hell. And he was out to get me. But as my sponsor took me through the steps, he introduced me to a God of his understanding, and through that I found a God of my understanding. And I think it's something that I'm going to work on for a lifetime. I think I'm still at the Gerber baby food part when it comes to me and God. Well, I just don't. I'm very immature at it. And that, I think, is good for me. It's a good place to start. So, that whole relationship with my first sponsor, he was like a communist. He was a right-wing fascist AA pig. He made me do stuff that I would have never done. But I was dying. I was so dying. I didn't know what to do. I was just so dying. And I don't think I could have got sober if I wasn't. And he'd tell me to do stuff. And then, you know, it wasn't long before I started questioning what he was telling me to do. And I said, well, you know, that doesn't make sense. He goes, I didn't ask you for your brilliant opinion. I just told you to go do it. I don't know if anybody remembers the greenhouse on Morris Boulevard. Well, when I first got sober, I was the maintenance man at that place, and Herb was the chair. Herb was my first resentment in AA. It was awesome. He goes, we're going to paint it. And we had a big group conscience meeting, and we all voted what color, and it was Lucky Irish Green. Now, who's not going to love Lucky Irish Green, right? So I go down, and I bring a paint thing, you know, we voted on all this stuff and went through it, and I got this little paint thing, and I said, we want Lucky Irish Green, and he mixes up 20 gallons or whatever it was, and we take it back over there, and we spray this little pattern on the side of the wall there, and I almost threw up. It was awful. So I call up Herb, and we had a splotch about this big on the wall, and I mean, it was awful, it was glowing. And I call up Herb. I said, listen, Herb, this paint's not going to make it. He says, Mike, is it Lucky Irish Green? I go, absolutely. He says, paint it. I go, all right, I'll paint it. They ain't going to like it. And we painted this thing, and it was cool. I mean, if anybody saw it when it was fresh paint, I mean, everybody puked at it. There was an old lady on Morris Boulevard with her hand on her heart. See, she owned one of them townhomes right across this road, and she knew this was not good. So then along comes Herb, and Herb goes, he says, hey, Mike, what are the chances we get this thing repainted? And I looked at that cat, and I said, what are the chances you getting a brush and getting your fat butt up on that ladder? I was furious, and because that was the only chance that place was going to get repainted. I wasn't doing it again because we did the whole thing, and I hated it from the minute we did it. You know what happened, though? It was an awesome thing because everybody knew where that greenhouse was. You know, they go, Where are you going? Where's the meeting at? So it's at the greenhouse. I said, oh, you know where that's at. It's over on Morris Boulevard. Where are you from? I said, New Orleans. Everybody knew where the greenhouse was. You know, the thing glowed. And after it dimmed down a year or two later, it really looked nice. You know, it just took a while. But in doing that service work, I changed. You know, and I didn't know. I've always been a taker. I mean, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and I took. And he taught me how to give. And I didn't know what he was doing. I'm not sure he knew what he was doing. I don't know. But he kept making me do stuff. One time, I'm dying and I'm whining. I was good at whining. New guy's whining. And he goes, I said, man, I got some problems. You know, this is going on and this is going on, this is going on, this is going on. You know, I got problems. And then he goes, listen, I want you to go to the greenhouse and I want you to clean all the ashtrays. What are you talking about? Didn't you just hear me? He said, just go, you know. So I go over there and it's closed. Nobody's there. He always said, don't get caught. That was important. So I go over there and the place is locked up and I break in. That was kind of fun. I said, yeah, all right, this will be all right. It was easy to break into. Yeah, anybody could have run. People broke into it all the time. But I broke in. And I cleaned all these ashtrays. It took me an hour. You know, I was in there scrubbing them. I mean, there was no nothing. And I laid them all out, and I set them down, and I'm in this, I'm in the big room, and I'm sitting there, and I'm looking around, and I'm going, wow, this is crazy good. This is awesome. And I said, it's all set out, and so I take off, you know, so I don't get caught, and I sneak out of there, and I'm feeling really good. 5:30, I go back to the meeting. There's a 5:30 meeting. I go in, I sit down, and some dude lights up, and he puts a cigarette out in my clean ashtray. It was awful. That was my clean ashtray. But the service part about it, you don't know. I mean, I didn't know. He was showing me that, and I didn't know that either. Ends up, turns out, my father dies, and my sponsor don't show up, and we have a falling out, and it was a hard falling out. And it was my first real AA lesson that people are people. You know, if you don't forgive them, you're going to die. It's a painful, painful process to learn that too. Forgiveness is such a big deal for me today. I try not to get angry. I try to forgive whenever it comes up because it hurts so damn bad for this alcoholic. But so we had a falling out, and it ends up where we don't talk, and then it ends up that his wife calls me and says, Frank had an aneurysm, he's in the hospital. And I raced down to the hospital. I didn't know. And I had already, but this time I got a different sponsor. And there's a story in between there. But I called him. I said, man, this is what happened. What do I do? He says, well, you go. You know, you go. So I go. And I got to make an amends to Frank. He was going to die. He died shortly thereafter. But I held his hand. I told him I loved him. And I told him a story. I was such a horse's butt. I'm stubborn. I think that comes with the territory. I mean, I haven't met anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous as, you know, the sponsor I had right then. I was told his mother died at 100, and I told him, I said, you know, she's the only woman I ever met more stubborn than you. So I made my amends, and then I got to be there for his family, and it was for me, it was huge. And I was like 9 years sober by then, and it was still a really big deal. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous emotionally very immature, right? And spiritually unfit. And the only thing I had going is that I was big, strong, and dumb. And today it seems like sometimes those are my greatest assets. It's good. Sometimes it's good not to be that smart. But so we ended up burying him. There was a, and you wouldn't have believed it, he knew everybody. AA is such a, if you're not used to being cared for, it's going to be hard. AA cares for their people, they do. We take care of our people. We went, she asked me, would I eulogize them? And I said, I don't know. I like to cry. You know, I'm emotionally immature. And my emotions are always on my shirt sleeve. So I said, I don't know if I can, but if I can, I'll say something. So we get there, and they're backed up out the door. I mean, the place is packed. And his nephew got up and said something, so I got, and it inspired me, and I went up and I told him what Frank had done for me. And what Frank had done for me is took this scared little boy, this immature drunk man, and helped him to find God and get sober. And I'm eternally grateful for that. And he was, if it wasn't for that cat, I don't know where I'd be. And I, again, like I said, humanness is through us. We are the bottom of the bottom. I mean, we are human. Recovery shows us how to change that. It shows us how to become givers. And I've been learning how ever since. I met my wife at 4.5 years in recovery. I got sober that April 30th, 1988. I picked up that white chip. I'd been trying to get sober since February 11th, 1983. But April 30th, 1988, I picked up that white chip. And I met my wife about 4 years later. And I did the program. I do the program. I still do the program. I think it's important for me. But at 4 years sober, I thought I was some kind of spiritual giant. And I want to report that if you're living alone, it's easy to be a spiritual giant. As soon as you mix another human being with me, we're going to see some shortcomings. And I did. I wasn't ready for that either because I thought I was sober. And I was sober. I just wasn't spiritually fit nor emotionally fit. But then I figured that out too. I started making amends. In the first year that we were married, I made over 100 amends to my wife. And I can tell you the difference between her and I is if it would have been her doing that with me, I would have left her. I just said, I can't be with you. She stayed. You know, she just stayed. And she's normal. That's the only shortcoming I can find in her, is that she married me. But through that, I learned how to stop doing that. I learned how to stop hurting people. Now, I still hurt people, don't get me wrong. I'm, like I said, a big, strong, tough, and dumb. I do stuff that hurts people, and I don't mean to. And somehow I'm trying to process through that, and with your help, if you don't kick me out, and I haven't been kicked out of here yet, that's another good, that's a saving grace of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's hard to get kicked out. You really got to work at it. But I'm growing through that. But through the process of being with this woman, I learned that if I were to just keep my opinion to myself, I'd take away a lot of those amends right away, and I learned how to do that from Alcoholics Anonymous. We got married and we had a kid, so now marriage was interesting. Living with another human being was very interesting, and now we're having a kid. And I was still a kid myself. Now I was 34, but going on 15. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to be a dad either. And Alcoholics Anonymous taught me how to do that too. And it came through people who have been dads, and it came through people who have been husbands. You know, the people that helped me through the positions I was in had already been through them. And I was learning how to get through them. I didn't know how to be a dad. My oldest is 18. He's graduating high school, and he's going to move up to Long Island. I don't want him to go. But I know he's got to go. You know, I do. I know that. My whole heart knows he's got to go, but I don't want him to go. He's lived with me for 18 years. I want him home. But and he's going to a good school, and his mother's supporting him, and she says, "You can't drive him up there." And I go, "Yes, I can." She goes, "No, you can't. You'll be crying the whole time." I said, "So? If I start crying, I'll pull over and stop. You know, and I'll quit crying, I'll drive some more. I don't care. I'll take him, and I'm going to do what a dad would do. Good dad. You know, I'm not a husband in training anymore. I know how to be a good husband. I'm still learning how to be a good dad. It's coming. It's slow. And it is slow. And I'm, and like I said, I don't know. If you're a drunk like me, I want you to know that for me, to drink is to die. For me, that's why I'm sober. You know, if I thought drinking was going to work, I wouldn't be here. For me, to drink is to die. If I go out there and take a drink, I'm going to die. Now, it might not be instantly. Now, it might be too. I don't know. But it's going to happen for this type of drunk. And if you ever read the big book, I'm in there. And the doctor's opinion explains it really well. And then he goes through and he says, he's got like 5 different types of alcoholics. I'm going, well, I'm not that. I'm not that. I'm not that, but I'm the last one. The last one is that you're perfectly normal in every way except when it comes to drinking alcohol. Well, and then as I got sober, I recognized I'm not that. I'm all them other ones. I didn't miss a one of them. I'm all those other ones. I was suicidal, homicidal. I was emotional upheaval. I was full of, was still full of. But I had all that stuff, and I didn't know any of that when I got here. In fact, I learned slowly. I'm a 2 month, 3 month guy. I used to be a 6 month guy. I used to go through something, and it could be a big blowout, huge, huge. And take me about 6 months to figure it out. I'd go, oh. Now it takes a couple months, you know. I'll be walking along, and all of a sudden I'll recognize that was a character defect that you can't afford to have. And I got this new sponsor. It's John G. He don't know me well. You know, he's a great guy, too. And I was lost. I had my sponsor moved away. I was doing a big book study, and I had nobody. So I had to get a sponsor, and we were going to do a fifth step. So I asked John. I prayed about it. I prayed about it, and John came up. It was over. So he says, yeah. And so he told me not to mention him tonight, but I don't care. He's my sponsor. I heard you, John. I'm just not listening. But he asked. He said, so I asked him to sponsor me. We talked a couple of times. Nothing's going on. I'm going through this book study. It's taking forever. So little John says something one day. He says, hey, Mike, you know, he says, you're pretty low maintenance. He says, you know, I don't think you need me to sponsor you. I said, well, geez, John, I read the book. I mean, I need somebody to do a fifth step with me. I need to be held accountable. I need a sponsor. And then he said, all right. So he stuck around. Thank God he did, too, because it changed my life. And I'm not blaming it on John. I'm just saying that God used him in a manner that I could understand. And that's how it happens in Alcoholics Anonymous. People come into your life and it hits you. It just happens. I have people hit me all the time. And John, I think it was divine intervention. I think John showed up for a reason in my life. G.W., I know G.W. forever. That guy saved my life once. I hate telling it to him. I think it's the first time I ever did. Now, I think everybody else has already heard the story. I was about 8.5 years sober, walking around in AA lost. That's when my sponsor died, and I was in between sponsors, and I was dying. Now, you think you got 5 years, you think you're sober, right? And you are. As sober as you can be for having 5 years. You know, they say you get your walking shoes. I still don't got my walking shoes. So now I'm dazed and confused, trying to figure it out, and I stumble into a meeting. It was another greenhouse meeting, only they had moved over to Fairbanks now. And GW's in there talking about, I don't remember if he was 23 or 25 years sober or something. He says, you know, when I was 19 years sober, I thought they were going to come and lock me up, put me in a rubber room. You know, I was 8.5 years sober, and I said, God, I am way ahead of schedule. I felt, and you know, you guys are laughing, but I walked out of that meeting, and I felt awesome. Only just for him sharing that. You know, and you go figure it out. I mean, so eventually I ended up getting a sponsor and going through the 12 steps again, and my life changed again. You know, and my other, Eddie, he was married, he was divorced 7 times. And he always saw me and my wife, and he was telling me, he said, you know, Mike, I couldn't give you any direction on marriage. He says, but if you ever need a divorce. He didn't. He was a wonderful man, too. And it seems like for every nut, there's a bolt in Alcoholics Anonymous. Everybody has, if you keep coming back, you're going to connect with people that you drive yourself crazy trying to figure out how that happens. Because I am connected with the most absurd friends that I've ever met in my life, and I love them. You know, that's the worst part. You know, I wasn't prepared for that. I just wanted to be sober. I didn't want to care for anybody. And you guys taught me how to care, and there's a steep price. I'll tell you what, if you learn how to love, it's a very steep price to learn that. For me, caring is hard. It's really hard. And it's the most valuable thing I think I'd ever received in Alcoholics Anonymous. I learned how to care. And it's not, you know what? You don't even got to be that close to me and I care for you. That's ridiculous. You know, it hurts. It's hard. It hurts. But it's the most awesome gift I think I've ever received. And I get to stand here, and if any of you guys knew me before, you'd have known I can't be here. I'm not. This is not me. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. I owe my life to Alcoholics Anonymous. There's people who have shown me how to do things that I could never do, ever. And I learned it from these guys. I learned it from you guys. I'm still amazed. We're going to be married 19 years in about 15 days. Now, I couldn't be married. I was a pig. And I mean that. I was the worst of the worst. And you guys showed me how to have integrity and love and honor. You showed me how to stand up. And you guys did that. Alcoholics Anonymous did that. You know, I got a report. I go to church now. And that's not... 10 years ago, if you said, you know, Mike's going to go to church on a regular basis, I'd say, you are so wrong. I'm not going to church. You know what happened? Is my wife and kids go to church, and they're baptized Lutherans and confirmed. And they're going to church, and I'm going to AA on Sundays is what I did. I went to my men's meeting. It was like my church. And that went on forever. And then one day I thought it was a good idea. Now, I was 19 years sober, I think. I thought it was a good idea that I go to church with my wife and children. And then I was proud of that. Well, then when I got quiet and looked at it, you know, I thought, you dummy. You've been sober 19 years and you've been married for 15 and you're going to go to church with your wife and children? See, that's not something anybody ought to be too proud of. But God has His time. I think the whole thing about AA is they say, find your own conception. You find them. And that's what opened me up. I've been chasing that ever since. And it's been taking me some places that I never thought it would. It's very kind of cool. But the big book says, why don't you find your own conception of God? Don't worry about mine. And all of a sudden, I started going. And then I started asking questions. I ended up in a Bible study. The guy told me to go. And I said, I'm not going. That's not for me. And I was driving home, and I was going, you know, the big book says that's contempt prior to investigation. So I said, I'm going to go. And then I'll contempt them. So I had it all figured out. I said, it'll take me about 6 times. I'm going to go 6 times, and then I'll contempt them. Had it all figured out. So I started going. And I copped a resentment against this guy. Regular Christian guy. He's not an alcoholic. He's a Christian guy. I don't know what to do. I'm having troubles. So I make an amends to him. I go there. What happened is we were talking in this circle, and he cut me off. And I got angry. I mean, inside anger. I mean, a real resentment. I mean, I wanted to beat him. That's how important what I had to say was. So, and it was killing me. Oh, man, my guts were in a knot. I never, and I'm, you know, it doesn't matter. It's over a long time. I don't care. I'm human. It happens. It's surely going to happen again. It might happen tonight. But so I went back to the guy and said, I need to talk to you. He goes, okay. And he's a great guy. You know, he's a great guy. And I said, listen, last week I was here and you cut me off because I'm sorry. I go, I'm not looking for an apology. I want to tell you I'm sorry because I was hurt and I got angry with you and I don't want to live like that anymore. And he started crying and I started crying and I said, see you later. And I don't do well around me because I tell them right away, if you're going to cry, you got to stay away from me because I like to cry. I just do. But what happened there was a miracle. What happened there was a miracle because, see, if I can't do that with them guys, this doesn't work. See, I can do it with you guys. You guys expect it. You see it coming. Oh, Willie's coming. You're making amends pretty soon now. You know, yeah, so in here, that's not what this program's about. This stuff is about out there. And what I'm going to do out there doesn't, in here, we know each other. We, in fact, we're so familiar with each other that we assume we know each other. See, we really don't. That guy we buried this morning, he's both fluent German and fluent Russian. He had read over 1,000 books. I'd be lucky to read half that. If I start now, I read books. I just looked at his library and I thought, oh man, he knew more about religion than I could ever even try to comprehend. Stuff that you don't see, you just assume you know a guy. And we got to clean out his apartment and his albums. You know, the man was he loved Mozart. You know, who knew? You know, I couldn't listen to that for 5 minutes without falling asleep. I used to read the traditions to fall asleep. That doesn't work anymore. I went to the stronger stuff. I read concepts now. I got a home group. I want to talk about my home group for a minute before I get out of here. If you don't have a home group, you're doing it wrong. I don't care. It's my opinion, and it's a good one. You should take it. If you don't have a sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous, you're wrong. You're going to die. That's not funny. It's true. See, we don't think it is. We think we know, but we don't. We need help. We need our help. We need our help. And we can't get it if we think we know. And that's where I was. So that's my message. Get help. Get a sponsor. It don't take much. All you got to do is see that he knows his way through the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, or she, and you got a sponsor. Just go say, show me how to do this. And then, what we say is that at the end of that, if you don't find a liking to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, we'll refund your misery for absolutely nothing. You can have it all right back. I got to read this here. And this is at the end of A Vision for You. See, now last week I read something from Bob's Nightmare, but John's here, so I got to read something different. This is the very end of A Vision for You. And it's not a vision for me unless I put my glasses on. Oops. It goes like this. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answer will come. If your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road to happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you. Amen.